Welcome back, Legal Eagles, to another deep dive. Today, we're dissecting Zafiro v. United States, a Supreme Court case that's got everyone talking about, you know, when a mountain of evidence leads to a finger-pointing frenzy.
Yeah, Zafiro really throws a wrench into the classic he said, she said, especially in drug cases where the pressure is on, you know, to shift the blame.
Okay, so set the scene for us. What kind of case are we dealing with?
Picture this. A Chicago bungalow, a police raid, and 55 pounds of cocaine.
Whoa.
That's Zafiro in a nutshell. Four defendants, Zafiro, Martinez, Garcia, and Soto, all caught in this drug bust. And get this, each one claims they're innocent, weaving a web of accusations, you know, pointing fingers at their co-defendants.
So basically, it's chaos in the courtroom.
Hmm.
But isn't there some kind of rule? I mean, how do courts handle this kind of finger-pointing frenzy?
Right. So that's where good old Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 14 comes in. We often call it Rule 14 for short. It lets judges separate trials if things get, well, too messy. But the question the Supreme Court grappled with in Zafiro wasn't whether Rule 14 existed, but like how strictly it should apply. Does every conflicting defense mean automatic separate trials? Or is there some, you know, wiggle room for the judge?
That's a huge difference. So how'd the Supreme Court land on that?
They didn't go for a hard and fast rule, which might surprise some folks. They acknowledged, you know, joint trials are usually preferred. They're efficient, avoid conflicting verdicts, and honestly, they're easier to manage. So they weren't about to say every time defendants disagree, boom, separate trials.
Okay, so they didn't just throw these four defendants in together and say, figure it out.
Not quite. They established what we call the serious risk standard. Basically, they said severance is only needed if a joint trial poses, you know, a serious risk to a defendant's right to a fair trial, or if it, like, really messes with the jury's ability to make a fair judgment.
So conflicting defenses alone aren't enough. There has to be a real threat to the fairness of the whole trial,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you got it. But then the question becomes, how do you actually prove that serious risk?
Yeah, good question.
And that's the kicker. That's a key takeaway for any lawyer handling a multi-defendant case. You can't just shout, they're blaming me, and expect a separate trial. Zafiro forces defense attorneys to get specific, to show the judge how a joint trial actually hurt their client beyond just the fact that, well, their co-defendants are singing a different tune.
But it shifts the burden, right? It's on the defense to prove that a joint trial will be unfair, not just assume that because their defenses clash, it automatically is.
You nailed it. And this has been a game changer in legal strategy since then. Just pointing out differing defenses isn't enough anymore. Lawyers need to think ahead, you know, anticipate how those conflicts might specifically prejudice their client. It adds a whole new layer to pre-trial strategy.
So let's get into the nitty-gritty of Zafiro.
Hmm.
How did these conflicting defenses play out? We've got four defendants, each with their own story. What were they claiming?
All right, let's start with Soto, the guy with the cocaine in his car.
Yeah.
He claims he was totally clueless about the drugs, insisted the box belonged to Garcia.
Hmm, interesting.
But of course, Garcia sings a different tune, right? He says the box was Soto's all along and that he was in the dark about what was inside.
Classic he said, she said, but with what, 55 pounds of cocaine?
Exactly. And hold on, it gets even better. Zafiro, the woman whose apartment got raided, she claims she was just Martinez's girlfriend, completely oblivious to any drug dealing.
Uh-huh.
And Martinez, he insists he was just visiting Zafiro and had no idea about any drugs either.
So we got four defendants, a whole lot of finger pointing and a whole lot of claiming they knew nothing. What did the Supreme Court make of all this? Did they believe any of them?
Well, the court wasn't really focused on the truth of each individual defense. Their job was to decide if the trial itself was fair. They wanted to know if these conflicting defenses created that serious risk of prejudice we talked about. And they actually noted that the trial judge took steps to, you know, try and smooth things out. He gave very specific instructions to the jury, telling them to, like, consider each defendant individually and ignore arguments that weren't backed up.
So the judge was basically saying, don't get caught up in the blame game, stick to the facts.
Yeah.
Did that satisfy the Supreme Court?
It did. The court ultimately decided the trial judge did enough to ensure fairness. The defendants couldn't pinpoint specific instances where they were harmed by the joint trial, so the Supreme Court upheld the convictions. But, and here's where things get interesting. Justice Stevens, while agreeing with the outcome, he wrote a separate opinion that adds another layer to the Zafiro legacy.
Justice Stevens, always bringing the intellectual fireworks. What was his take? So it sounds like Justice Stevens was, you know, urging some caution here, reminding us that joint trials, while efficient, aren't always the perfect answer.
Exactly. And his concerns have resonated with a lot of, you know, legal scholars and practitioners, it really highlights this fundamental tension in the legal system, right? Efficiency versus protecting individual rights.
That tension seems to be at the heart of so many legal debates, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Balancing practicality with the principles of justice.
Absolutely. And Stevens was urging us not to sacrifice fairness just for the sake of efficiency. He was deeply concerned that, you know, clinging too tightly to joint trials could lead to miscarriages of justice, especially in cases where, let's say, one defendant has a ton of evidence against them and another one has a much weaker case.
Yeah, that makes sense. Even with the judge telling the jury to consider each defendant separately, it's hard to imagine the evidence against one wouldn't, like, bleed over into how they see the other, especially if the crime is really bad or the evidence is graphic.
Exactly. That's the spillover effect that Justice Stevens was so worried about. He argued that in some cases, the evidence against one defendant might be so powerful that it's almost impossible for jurors to, you know, compartmentalize it and fairly evaluate the other defendant's case on its own, even with the best instructions from the judge.
So, like, trying to convince a jury that one little spark didn't cause a whole forest fire.
That's a perfect analogy. It really underscores how important judicial discretion is. Justice Stevens was reminding us that judges have to be on their toes, carefully weighing the specifics of each case and deciding whether a joint trial would really guarantee a fair and impartial hearing for everyone involved.
It sounds like Justice Stevens was pushing for a more nuanced approach, recognizing that there were situations where, you know, the potential for prejudice is so high that a joint trial just wouldn't be fair, no matter how well-meaning the judge is or how clear the instructions are.
Exactly. He was challenging the one-size-fits-all approach, reminding us that sometimes you just need separate trials to ensure justice is truly served. And his perspective has really shaped how we think about Zafiro.
It's fascinating how a concurring opinion can add so much depth to a case. It shows that law isn't just about the majority ruling, but also about those dissenting and concurring voices that, you know, push back on our assumptions and force us to grapple with different perspectives.
Absolutely. Those dissenting and concurring opinions often offer valuable insights and, you know, really influence how legal thought evolves over time. Sometimes they can be just as influential as the majority opinion.
So we've gone deep into the legal logic behind Zafiro, explored Justice Stevens's thought-provoking concurrence, and talked about the challenges of balancing efficiency and fairness in these joint trials. But let's switch gears a bit and talk about the human side of things. After all, these are real people whose lives are deeply affected by the outcome. What happened to the defendants in Zafiro after the Supreme Court ruling?
Well, the Supreme Court's decision meant their convictions were upheld. So all four were found guilty of conspiring to possess and distribute drugs, and they all faced some serious prison time.
So in the end, all that finger pointing backfired.
Yeah, and that's a really important takeaway from Zafiro. This isn't about loopholes or gaming the system. It's about a fair trial, even when the defendant's stories are clashing.
And in this case, the Supreme Court decided they did get a fair trial, despite all the finger pointing. But I imagine the outcome was still incredibly stressful and difficult for them.
Absolutely. Imagine facing serious charges, trying to defend yourself, and then ultimately being found guilty. It's a harsh reminder that the legal system, even when it's trying to protect rights and ensure justice, can be a source of immense stress and hardship for those caught within it.
It's a good reminder that behind every legal case, there are human stories, you know, filled with hopes and fears and consequences that reach far beyond the courtroom. We can't forget that as we analyze these cases and dissect the legal arguments.
Couldn't agree more. It's easy to get lost in the intellectual puzzle of a case, but we can never forget the human impact. These are real people's lives we're dealing with.
So we've talked a lot about how conflicting defenses can create problems for courts and potentially bias the jury against the defendant. But Justice O'Connor, in her majority opinion, kind of hinted at something counterintuitive. That sometimes these conflicting defenses might actually weaken the prosecution's case. It's a fascinating idea. Can you unpack that for us? How could that even work?
It does seem counterintuitive, right? You'd think having defendants contradict each other would help the prosecution, you know, creating doubt and confusion. But think about a scenario where the prosecution's evidence is mainly circumstantial, right? They don't have that smoking gun, that clear piece of evidence that directly links a defendant to the crime. They're relying on a chain of inferences, connecting different bits of circumstantial evidence to build their case.
Okay, so they're building a bridge from the evidence to the defendant's guilt, and that bridge is made of circumstantial connections.
Exactly. Now imagine the defendants, in their scramble to shift the blame, start poking holes in that narrative. They point out contradictions in witness statements, question the reliability of some evidence, you know, raise doubts about how the evidence was handled.
So they're kind of tearing down the prosecution's bridge brick by brick, even though they're doing it for selfish reasons, not to help each other?
That's the point. They're not cooperating or trying to build a united defense. They're trying to throw each other under the bus. But without realizing it, they might be exposing weaknesses in the prosecution's case that the defense attorneys might have missed or couldn't exploit on their own.
So they're accidentally working together, even though their goals are totally opposite. And this accidental teamwork could actually benefit them all.
It definitely can. By highlighting inconsistencies and raising those doubts, they might unintentionally create enough reasonable doubt in the jury's minds to lead to acquittals, even if their individual stories aren't completely convincing. It's a strange paradox of the legal system. Sometimes being selfish can accidentally lead to a collective win.
That's a great example of how the, you know, the adversarial nature of our legal system can sometimes lead to unexpected outcomes. It's not always a simple battle of good versus evil. It's a complex dance of competing interests, strategies, and unintended consequences.
Exactly. And Zafiro is a perfect illustration of that. It reminds us that law isn't some static set of rules. It's a dynamic process that's always being shaped by human behavior, strategic choices, and sometimes a bit of legal luck.
Speaking of luck, let's talk about another interesting wrinkle in Zafiro. The idea that sometimes even the most antagonistic defenses might point to a shared truth that the prosecution has overlooked.
Yes. That's a point Justice Stevens brought up in his concurrence. He raised the idea of what we call mutual ignorance defenses, where defendants might seem like they're blaming each other, but their stories, even though they conflict, are actually both true.
Can you give an example? I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around how two contradictory defenses could both be accurate.
Let's go back to our Chicago bungalow. Remember Soto and Garcia, each claiming the other was responsible for the cocaine? What if neither of them actually knew about the drugs?
So they're both truly innocent, but how is that possible? Someone had to put the cocaine there.
Exactly. And that's where the prosecution's theory might fall apart. What if someone else, maybe someone not even involved in the case, stashed the drugs without Soto or Garcia knowing? Their defenses, even though they seem to clash, could both be rooted in truth.
That's mind-blowing. It really challenges how we think about conflicting defenses and highlights the need to look deeper beyond the surface to get to the real truth, like peeling back the layers of an onion.
That's a great analogy. It really emphasizes the importance of critical thinking in law. We can't just accept things at face value, right? We have to question assumptions, consider other explanations, and be open to the possibility that seemingly contradictory stories might actually point to a shared truth that's been overlooked.
It reminds us that law isn't always about finding the right answer or saying who wins or loses. It's about finding the truth, understanding the nuances, and making sure justice is done, even the most complex and seemingly contradictory cases.
Beautifully put. I think Zafiro, with all its twists and turns, is a perfect example of how the law wrestles with these really tough questions and tries to strike a balance between efficiency, fairness, and the pursuit of truth.
This has been a truly eye-opening deep dive into Zafiro v. United States, a case that still sparks debate and shapes legal strategies all these years later.
It's been a pleasure exploring this fascinating case with you. And for those listening, especially law students and lawyers navigating multi-defendant cases, Zafiro offers some really valuable lessons.
Absolutely. So before we wrap up part two, let's distill some key takeaways from Zafiro for practicing lawyers. What are the most important lessons they should remember when dealing with conflicting defenses?
Well, I think Zafiro really drives home the importance of being prepared, you know, paying attention to every detail. Defense attorneys have to approach joint trials knowing the potential risks and be ready to build a strong case for severance if it's needed. It's not just about saying, hey, our defenses clash, give us separate trials. It takes a much more strategic and nuanced approach.
So, like, prepping for a game of legal chess. Anticipate the other side's moves, find those weaknesses, and have a counter strategy to protect your client.
Exactly. And this strategic thinking should be applied to everything from jury selection to prepping witnesses to presenting evidence.
So it's not a one-time argument. It's like a whole mindset, right?
Yeah.
And having a lawyer who really gets Zafiro and can see those potential problems can make all the difference.
Couldn't agree more. Having effective legal representation is crucial, especially in high-stakes cases where the legal landscape is tricky. But Zafiro also provides some good insights for prosecutors.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but it makes sense that it would shape their approach, too.
Well, think about it. Zafiro actually strengthens the preference for joint trials, giving prosecutors a valuable tool for streamlining cases and potentially strengthening their arguments. But with that efficiency comes the responsibility to be fair and avoid anything that might unfairly prejudice any of the defendants.
So it's like walking a tightrope for prosecutors. They need to be efficient, but not at the cost of justice.
Precisely. Zafiro pushes prosecutors to approach joint trials knowing the potential for prejudice and to take steps to minimize those risks.
So things like carefully writing jury instructions, presenting evidence in a way that minimizes spillover, and being mindful of how one defendant's words or actions might affect the others. It's a lot to handle.
It definitely is. It requires understanding the law, strategic thinking, and a strong commitment to ethical conduct.
This conversation has really shed light on the complexities of Zafiro and how it continues to impact the legal system. But we've only just scratched the surface. There's still so much to explore. So for our listeners who want to dive even deeper, join us for part 3, where we'll dig into the implications of Zafiro and look at some hypothetical scenarios to see how it plays out in the real world. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've been digging into Zafiro v. United States, a case that's just full of legal twists and turns. We've talked about how it sets a high bar for getting separate trials and forces lawyers to get strategic about, you know, conflicting defenses. But I'm really curious about real-world examples where Zafiro really comes into play. What are some cases where this serious risk standard might be really tough to apply?
You've hit the nail on the head. Zafiro doesn't give us a clear-cut formula, right? It's more like a set of guidelines that judges have to interpret, you know, case by case. And that can lead to some pretty tricky decisions.
Give us an example. What's a situation where that line between just conflicting and seriously risky gets blurry?
Okay, imagine a case with two defendants accused of a violent robbery. One defendant has a rock-solid alibi. They were definitely out of town when it happened. But the other defendant, no alibi, but their lawyer argues the eyewitness ID is weak and the prosecution's case is basically circumstantial.
Okay, so one defendant seems pretty clearly innocent and the other one facing a weaker case, but not impossible. How does Zafiro factor in here?
That's where the serious risk standard gets tough. The defendant with the alibi might argue that, you know, being tried alongside someone with a shakier case creates this unfair association. The jury, hearing about the robbery and seeing the other defendant without an alibi, might be more likely to convict both, even if the evidence against the one with the alibi is flimsy.
So even if the judge says, consider them separately, there's still that risk that just having the other defendant there and the evidence against them could sway the jury.
Exactly. That's that spillover effect Justice Stevens was talking about. And in a case like this, the lawyer for the defendant with the alibi would have to really make a strong case that a joint trial puts their client's right to a fair trial at risk, even if they can't point to specific examples of prejudice.
That sounds like a tough argument to win. How do you convince a judge that something might happen when it hasn't actually happened yet?
It's definitely not easy, and that's why Zafiro has had such a big impact. It puts the pressure on the defense to be really persuasive, to anticipate problems, and to show the judge as clearly as possible how a joint trial could jeopardize their client's rights.
So it's like Zafiro added this whole new level of strategy to criminal defense. It's not just about fighting the charges. It's about fighting the potential influence of your co-defendant.
You got it. And it's interesting to see how lawyers have adapted their strategies because of Zafiro. They can't just rely on general claims of being treated unfairly anymore. They have to think ahead, anticipate how the joint trial might go, and show the judge exactly where those serious risks are.
It's like a legal chess match, right? You're not just thinking about your own client's defense, but also about how the co-defendant's case and the evidence against them might influence the jury.
That's a great analogy. And it highlights how Zafiro has made these multi-defendant cases even more complex and challenging for both the defense and the prosecution.
Now, we've spent a lot of time on the potential downsides of joint trials, the risks of prejudice, and the challenges of proving serious risk. But Justice O'Connor, in her majority opinion, stressed that joint trials are usually the preferred way to go. Why is that? What are the benefits of trying defendants together, even when their defenses clash?
That's a really important point. Joint trials aren't inherently bad. In fact, they have several advantages. First off, efficiency. Trying defendants together saves time, money, and court resources. It's just simpler to have one trial instead of multiple separate trials.
That makes sense, logistically. It's like getting all your errands done in one trip instead of going back and forth multiple times.
Exactly. And efficiency isn't the only plus. Joint trials also help to ensure consistency in verdicts. If you try defendants separately, there's always that chance that juries might reach different conclusions because the evidence is presented slightly differently. This can lead to conflicting verdicts, where one defendant is found guilty and the other is acquitted, even though they were both involved in the same crime.
So joint trials help avoid those confusing situations where the legal system seems to contradict itself.
Exactly. And there's another advantage that often gets overlooked. Joint trials can actually promote fairness by giving the jury a more complete picture of what happened.
How so? I'd think having multiple defendants, each with their own story and lawyer, would just muddy the waters and make it harder for the jury to figure out the truth.
That's a fair point. But think of it this way. In a separate trial, the jury only hears one side of the story from one defendant. They don't get the other perspective, the other defendant's explanation of what happened. This can give them a skewed or incomplete view of the events.
So by having all the defendants together, the jury sees the whole picture, like putting together a puzzle with all the pieces laid out.
Perfect analogy. The jury gets to hear all the different sides, weigh all the evidence, and make a more informed decision. And sometimes those conflicting defenses can actually help the jury reach a fair verdict by highlighting problems with the prosecution's case or revealing a shared truth that might have been hidden in separate trials.
That's a really interesting point. It challenges the idea that conflicting defenses always help the defendants by creating doubt. Sometimes those clashes actually shed light on the truth and help the jury reach a more just outcome.
Absolutely. And I think that's a key takeaway from Zafiro. It's not a simple case with an easy answer. It's a nuanced look at how complex joint trials are, the potential for both fairness and prejudice, and the ongoing challenge of balancing efficiency with protecting individual rights.
This deep dive into Zafiro v. United States has been incredibly insightful. It's a case that still fuels debate and shapes legal strategies even decades later. We've explored the legal arguments, the strategic implications, and the human impact at the heart of this complex and fascinating case.
It's been my pleasure to break down these intricacies with you. And to all our listeners, whether you're seasoned attorneys or law students just starting out, I encourage you to keep exploring legal precedents and their real-world implications. There's a wealth of knowledge to uncover, and each case offers a glimpse into the complexities of our legal system and the pursuit of justice.
So keep those legal minds sharp, stay curious, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive into the fascinating world of law.